Curtis Sliwa. The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels, was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Sister shotgun, oh yeah. Hey little sister, who's your Superman? Hey little sister shotgun, it's a nice day to start again. It's a nice day for a white wedding.
Oh, this is gonna be a happy lady.
It's a nice day to start
and a rich
again.
One
7 minutes after the hour at 12. Why are we playing this great song by Billy Idol, White Wedding?
Well, you didn't watch the game, I take it. You're probably so immersed in the New York City mayoral debate that you didn't watch the end of this fantastic series between the Los Angeles Dodgers, my brother's favorite team, sorry, John, and the Astros of Houston.
I watched bits of the World Series because it was interesting.
You did.
But not the final game.
Well,
I had no interest since the Yanks got washed out by the Astros.
Well, a lot of other people did because people are so sick of football. But anyway, there was a really, really wonderful moment. Oh, should we talk about who won first?
I guess
we probably should. Let's hear that final call.
Pitch on the way. Round ball right side into the shift to his left Altuve. Has it in short right. Throws to first. And the Astros are 2017 World Series champions. For the first time ever, the Astros are baseball's best.
So now, was Bush 41's hands...
Oh, come on.
Were they duct taped down to his wheelchair so he wouldn't start groping women in celebration of the Astros' victory?
No, I think that's a little much. No, I'm sure he was perfectly fine with his lovely wife, Barbara, next to him.
Wasn't perving any women last night.
I don't think so. I think I would imagine the handlers are taking much better care of him as of late.
Well, he didn't say to Jeb, you see, that could have been the victory celebration of you if you had stood up to Trump instead of whooshing out.
I don't think he's thinking about that. I think he was just happy, to see, a Texas team win. Okay, leave him alone. We'll talk about all this swill, this sexual harassment swill, a little bit later on in the show.
Oh, Dustin Hoffman, Tootsie ends up grabbing Tookus.
The list is just like, it's growing exponentially. Isn't that lovely? But wait, hold on a second. So the reason that we played that fantastic Billy Idol song in the beginning of the show was because right at the end, when the reporter was talking to the shortstop, Mr. Correa, Carlos Correa.
Yeah, Carlos Correa.
He talks about it. And he's like, my life is going to change forever. And he
he's a great shortstop. He just won the World Series.
That's not the only reason.
That's how his life will change forever.
No, not quite. Well, that'll
especially when
help
he becomes
him.
A free agent, and all the big bucks teams like the Dodgers and the Yankees start throwing wheelbarrows of money at him.
He twists around, and he's standing, of course, right by the baseline there with all the people and probably his family members. And all of a sudden, he turns around. And he proposes to his beautiful girlfriend.
Oh
no,
sucker.
It was really good. It was good, I have to say. I usually don't like the public, the big public proposals, the cliche type stuff, but this was good.
Did he get a prenup?
I understand why you asked that, and believe me, I understand too. But
what a sucker.
Why? He looked like he was a very happy guy, and I just was wondering what would happen if she...
You know, that'll last for all of 1 year.
Why are you saying that? There are a lot of very happy couples out there. Just because you weren't one... Well, you are now.
Yes, I am now.
Okay,
but the point is that he's a sucker. He didn't have to do that. He went on national TV
to show his love, which is a wonderful thing. Because a lot of these guys, they're traveling around 80 days a year or less.
Oh, and he doesn't have any home slices on the road, right?
I think he's trying to show, honey, I'm all yours. You're all mine.
Yeah, that'll last. Sure, that'll last.
God, you're such a cynic.
Oh, God.
I'm so happy
I did not watch the final game of the World Series and obviously the post-game theatrics of Korea getting down on one knee and proposing to his girlfriend.
Oh, it was so cute. It was a nice big rock, too. Oof, that thing was nice.
Well,
very quickly.
So he took a knee. not for the playing of the national anthem, but rather to propose to his girlfriend.
Well, I mean, yeah, at least he took a knee.
See, in the NFL, they take a knee when they play the national anthem. That disgrazia, that group of anti-patriotic football players. But then, in baseball, they take a knee to propose to their gal pal at the end of a victory in which you win the World Series.
You guys, listening to this right now, you guys, just to make a very clear point here, he is very cynical, and he's all, you know, oh, why would he do that? Got a prenup. But the fact is that every time you say anything about a woman who happens to be attractive, he immediately, in personal life, in our, you know, one-on-one conversations, he immediately brings it back to his beautiful girlfriend, Nancy. So you are a little romantic. I mean, you have been married a few times.
Yeah, quite a few times. I'm a serial marrier. But then again, you've matched me almost marriage for marriage.
Yes, I have, but this is the right one. And I was also much younger than you when I was going through these things. But did you ever have a really public proposal, like one of these?
Hell no.
No?
No way.
Really?
To me, that's goofy. You're a goofball when you do that.
Oh, I don't think so. Don't say that. You're probably alienating half of our audience.
You mean to get down on wounded knee.
On one knee.
To bend, buck, and bow.
And beg.
And beg, only to be turned down, which has happened quite a few times to a lot of gavones out there when they've tried that trick.
Well, have you been turned down?
No. Actually, every time I asked... I was given the green light, and only to regret it later on.
Seriously regret it later on. Well, every time I was asked, I said yes. Well, actually, that's not true.
Oh, really?
No, there were a couple that I didn't.
How many did you turn down?
Well, one I told, I knew he was about to, and I was like, don't. So I made him, that was horrible. That was
bad. Well, let's find out from our many listeners out there.
Let's do it.
Were you ever in a situation in which you were proposed to? Ladies.
Or you proposed.
Right. But let's say from the ladies' point of view, and you said no to the gavon. And guys, did you ever get down on wounded knee and castrate yourself? And here you got the Rock, from the Hackensack Jewelry Mall or whatever that place is that's been in business forever. And your zirconium is in your hand and you're giving it to
zirconium? You mean zirconium?
Whatever. And you're proposing and then all of a sudden you got shut out. She said no. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Now, on that note, can we flip the script to Uzbeki boy from Paterson, New Jersey, from Genesee Street? Because I'm having a feeling now that he has decided, hey, forget my Miranda rights. I'll tell you everything you need to know, feds. And his wife apparently is talking like a yenta. She's more than happy to reveal whatever it is.
Fantastic.
About his ISIS relationship that was taking place.
Great. Wish she would have been talking a little bit sooner.
But I guarantee you that Uzbeki boy was not getting down on wounded knee and offering a zirconium or whatever from the Hackensack Jewelry Exchange to the woman with the hijab on who became his wife, who was living there, raising his kids there on Genesee Street.
Three kids. Well, according to his defense attorney, he was in pain yesterday.
He was in pain, right?
Yeah, after being shot in his stomach, after mowing eight people down and injuring dozens more.
He's lucky to be alive. He's lucky that that police officer from the first...
Is he, though, lucky to be alive at this point?
Hell yeah, that the police officer from the first precinct stopped him in his tracks by shooting him in the abdomen, didn't shoot him between the eyes and turn him into room temperature.
Well, guess what? But hopefully we're gleaning a lot of information from this guy because he seems to be just overjoyed with the fact that he has achieved this despicable act. But also, he doesn't seem to be, exactly holding back. I mean, he's talking. He's spouting off about how he wanted the ISIS flag. He actually was thinking about putting the ISIS flag on his truck. But then he thought that... Rightly so, that might attract some attention.
That might attract some attention. You know,
perhaps.
most people wouldn't have even known what the ISIS flag was.
I don't know.
I mean, we could run up and down 34th Street right here in the shadow of Madison Square Garden running around with an ISIS flag.
I don't know.
And how many people do you think, other than the guys who are at the newsstands, the Pakistanis who run the newsstands?
Oh, no. We've seen all those horrible videos. I think people would know. 848-WABC, give us a call and let us know.
Anyway,
you would recognize this type of thing.
I think it's Minnie who's on the line from Brooklyn. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Minnie?
Hi, it's Minnie. Am I? How are you?
Oh,
Minnie. I'm so excited to speak to you.
Well, now, you have a story to tell us about a proposal?
Yeah, so I'm happily married now with three beautiful children. But I had a story when I was around 22 years old. I was dating this guy. It was after, like, a serious breakup with someone else. So I was kind of playing around. It was not serious on my point of view. And then I went on vacation to Miami with my sister-in-law. And the next thing I know, this guy, I'm from Brooklyn. He flies over from Brooklyn and surprises me with roses in the car. And I'm like, oh, my God. When I saw him, I knew exactly what was happening.
Oh, that's such a terrible feeling.
It was horrible. And he's, like, driving, and he's, like, all smiles, and he's, like, so excited. And I asked him, like, what are we doing, and where are we going? And I realized he, like, you know, came out that his friends were all waiting for us with a whole huge, you know, shebang ready to happen. And I stopped him, and it was horrible. It was heartbreaking. I felt so bad. Till this day, I feel bad about it.
Oh, I hear you. That happened to me. Somebody came out from California down to Florida, down to Miami, and I knew what was happening, and I just was like, I just have to tell you right off the bat, this is not that's
I felt so bad.
And especially when you know that they've forked over a lot of money for a rock. Oh, that's even worse.
And he was so excited, like he was so cute, like a little teddy bear, you know.
But better,
so bad.
Better you didn't let drag him through the excitement of, you know, the saying yes and all that. Curtis is looking at me like he's just having a meltdown from this conversation.
No. So,
so girl here, talk.
Here
no
are
thanks.
These nebbishy schlubby guys who thought they were on their way to matrimonial.
Oh, this
hell.
Guy wasn't schlubby at all. My guy was a tall, handsome guy, but just wasn't the right one for
me. Mine too, but he just wasn't. You know, I mean, it was physically great, but it just wasn't the right one for life. I wasn't going to marry him, and then all of a sudden he's coming down with that he flew down from Brooklyn. I felt so bad. He made the grand gesture, you know, but...
Now, Minnie, have you seen him since?
I don't want to give it too much just in case someone's listening, but we grew up on the same block as kids, and then, you know, just casually dated when we were older, and then since then, he lives in my area, I've heard, but no, I've seen him since then, but not often. Just like,
well, you know what? He probably is grateful to you, I'm sure, you know, hopefully he's moved on with his life and has a great family.
I hope
and
so.
My guy found a woman a few years later. He married her. She had a daughter. He has two sons. I mean, they're living in Chicago, you know, living the life.
Oh,
and I'm thrilled for him. He would have been a disaster with me.
Did they?
Poor guy.
He actually, right after the whole story happened in Florida, a few weeks later, he got engaged really quickly to someone else.
They have
a beautiful daughter, I'm sure, but they did get divorced. And I always felt horrible. I don't know what happened, but I just, whenever I think back to the story, I feel very bad.
No, you did the right thing.
Well, remember, he had to get rid of that rock, so he had to either pawn it or find another woman to give it to him.
He could have held on to it. these conversations, it's just so awkward. By the way,
the guy you dissed and dismissed and caused to have postpartum depression by rejecting his proposal, did he ever reach out to you on Facebook?
He did. We're Facebook friends.
Oh.
Yeah.
Does your husband know this?
Oh, of course he does.
Oh, and your husband welcomes
this? I haven't seen this guy.
He's a Facebook friend of yours, right?
I have very few exes that are Facebook friends.
By the way.
Only because I do respect my husband.
Were you ever lip locking with this guy?
What? Like in my life?
Yeah, lip locking, you know.
Like did I ever kiss this guy?
Yeah.
Okay. I dated him for 5 years.
And your husband doesn't have a problem that he's now your Facebook friend?
I can assure you this man is very, very happy with his wonderful family, and he is thrilled for me and my marriage.
Sure,
believe me. Listen, I wouldn't let anybody shady in my life. Trust me. I don't find it cute when men are flirtatious with
How many other Facebook friends do you have that were paramours of yours a while back?
I think that's it.
You think?
Yeah, I think so.
You don't know?
No, I think that's it.
Oh,
I wasn't. No, I'm not friends with anybody that I was engaged or married to. I'm trying to think. No, I don't think I'm friends with anybody
okay.
else. What about you, Curtis?
No. That's it. Remember, I never talked to any of my previous wives.
Well, I don't talk to my previous husband.
Unless I have to talk to them because of business, I have absolutely nothing to say to them.
I totally am. Yeah, I'm down with you on that one. I have nothing to say to my exes either. One of them I wouldn't have a problem, you know, being friends with, but the other ones, no.
Anyway, our number is 1-800-848-WABC.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa.
77 WABC.
My administration is coordinating closely between federal and local officials to investigate the attack and to further investigate this animal who did the attacking.
This was our president yesterday speaking about Uzbeki boy from Uzbekistan in the Central Asian Republics who was living in Patterson when he launched that attack in that rental Home Depot truck the other afternoon going down the West Side Highway on the bike path. Then the president said about Congress.
I'm going to ask Congress to immediately initiate work to get rid of this program. Diversity lottery sounds nice. It's not nice. It's not good. This man that came in, or whatever you want to call him, brought in with him other people. And he was the point of contact, the primary point of contact for, and this is preliminarily, 23 people. That came in or potentially came in with him. And that's not acceptable. So we want to get rid of chain migration.
The whole 23 people thing, though, nobody can seem to confirm this. Now, that doesn't mean that he wasn't briefed on information that he wasn't supposed to potentially talk about publicly, therefore informing these 23 people that they are now being under the watchful eye of the feds. But you know, reports show that he doesn't seem to be able to, nobody seems to be able to kind of back this up.
Well,
what do you think?
It would be interesting to see if, in fact, there is that chain immigration that the president was referring to as per this case of Uzbeki boy. So I think it's worth probing.
Mm-hmm.
The president is often apt of saying things that happen not to be true
or
misstating
or saying things that he might have been told not to talk about publicly.
But
here's
something I completely agree with the president on, mm-hmm, in terms of where Uzbeki boy should end up.
Send him to Gitmo. I would certainly consider that. Look, it's very simple. What we are demanding is merit-based immigration. We want people that are going to help our country. We want people that are going to keep our country safe.
So now all eyes are on Uzbekistan, whereas they weren't before, especially from the administration. But obviously, in light of what happened the other day, Uzbekistan is now, in the bullseye.
Well, it's in the bullseye. But then again, there's many Uzbekis who live here. There are many people from Kazakhstan who live here and from the Central Asian Republics who are very productive, who own businesses.
And who are speaking out, actually.
Yeah, speaking out, who raise families and are inculcating them in terms of what it's like to live in the West and what it's like to be an American.
But Uzbekistan does have a majority Muslim population, an authoritarian dictator.
Oh, yeah, the worst.
Bad guy. But our ally.
Our ally, because he helped us when we invaded Afghanistan by allowing our troops to be stationed there in supplies and then ferried through the mountain areas there because Pakistan wouldn't permit it, and then right into Afghanistan.
Yeah, it's one of those allies that kind of, it's a loaded ally, I guess you could say.
Load him up with American dollars in order to ensure he remains our ally.
Yeah, exactly. But a lot of the younger set in Uzbekistan, the younger men, have left the country. Some have joined ISIS. Some have just left the country because it's a crappy place to live.
I would love it if Uzbeki boy ended up being the celly or even the Maytag to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. Now, remember, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was the mastermind of the World Trade Center blast. He's the guy who convinced Osama bin Laden, like a salesman would, you should blow up planes. You know, you should really have planes crashing into buildings. That'll really get the attention of the world. And at first, Osama bin Laden said, get out of here. He goes, yeah, but my cousin, Ramzi Youssef, that was his idea until he got caught trying to blow up the World Trade Center the first time in 1993. So Osama bin Laden said, what? Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, your cousin was Ramzi Youssef, the mastermind of the first attempt to take down the World Trade Center?
Yep.
He said, yeah, in Pakistan, we were kissing cousins. You see, why not send Uzbeki boy to Gitmo? And wouldn't you consider waterboarding this guy?
Well, you always hear the argument that that's not helpful and that forces them to say whatever and just to get out of this torturous situation. But, you know, the fact is that you sit there and you watch the family members who are now dealing with the loss of their loved ones by the psychopath sicko. And you, I mean, I can't help it. I want the guy to go through hell.
Let's find out from our many listeners out there. Oh, is Gitmo the place that Uzbeki boy should go? And in fact, if he gives us misinformation, because he may be talking like a yenta now, but it may be all misinformation, should he be subjected to good old-fashioned former Vice President Dick Cheney waterboarding there at Gitmo? 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. But on that note, let's get some news headlines and updates from Ken Duffy.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Quick justice, and we need strong justice. Much quicker and much stronger than we have right now. Because what we have right now is a joke and it's a laughing stock.
Wow. President of the United States talking about our criminal justice system.
Well, at times I feel that way.
You know, I don't know that I want the president saying that. I think, you know, in individual cases, yeah, we find that. But overall, I think our criminal justice system is fair. It doesn't always work. But overall, I think it's fair.
I don't know. I think he has a right to weigh in on this.
Of course he does.
Especially when it comes to the way we treat terrorists.
Well, can I just say something? This is a guy who has talked about waterboarding. We were talking about that a little while ago. He said he would bring back, and this was his quote, a hell of a lot worse than waterboarding.
Well, you know, interesting.
He said, torture does work, he says.
Because earlier I was going through my emails, and Johnny Legit and Michael Dubs were going back and forth about grabbing this guy, Uzbeki boy, putting him on Gitmo and waterboarding him. And that started off an entire conversation with others. And it's done exactly that here on our show. So let's go to Sergeant Dan, who's first up in the queue, calling from Brooklyn. Welcome to WABC, Sarge.
Hey, Curtis. How you doing? Is Juliet there?
Yep. Hi.
Hi. How you doing? Listen,
good.
Two quick points. Number one, I'm going to volunteer to take him to Splish Splash. He'll be wishing he was waterboarded when I get done with him. And second of all, where was the NFL heroes the other day? You know what it was? It was a New York City police officer that took the terrorist down.
That's right. Now, I might add, Sergeant Dan, you know, for all those who claim you're a better cop if you happen to live in the five boroughs of the city of New York than if you happen to be from the suburbs or out of the five boroughs, he's a Long Island boy.
Well, there you go. He's a Long Island boy.
Sergeant Dan was getting that reverb there.
Well, we have a lot of tough folks out on Long Island.
So Sergeant Dan, he's ready to waterboard. In fact, he wants to take him to Splish Splash first.
Yeah, okay, well, Sergeant Dan, maybe Mr. Trump President Trump will listen to your request. President Trump would like this guy to bought down to Gitmo, Guantanamo Bay in Cuba, where, by the way, my dad grew up.
You know something?
He was on the Navy base there.
Oh, he did?
Mm-hmm. He did, yeah.
Wow. Whose side was he on?
He was on the American side.
Oh, he wasn't on Castro's side,
no,
huh?
No, my uncle was a colonel in the Marine Corps, yeah.
Does he remember Batista, Machado, who were the dictators that we propped up there before Castro came to power?
I don't know what he remembers, but it's been a while.
But you know, as Sergeant Dan mentioned, Splish Splash.
Mm-hmm. What is that exactly?
Well,
is that like some water park?
My two youngest sons wanted desperately to go there.
Okay.
I think it's south of 25. If am I correct, you Mongolooch Bryant's
Jersey
near Riverhead, you know, but it's as you move south, because you know there's some people in Long Island. If you don't go north, they don't even want to deal with
you. Somebody was talking about that my husband was talking about that, saying we should go there sometime.
Right. So my two sons desperately, Carter and Hunter, wanted to go to Splish Splash.
Yeah.
And Carter got sick there.
What do you mean he got sick there?
From the water.
Oh God.
Let's face it, the other kids, you know what they do in the water. They urinate in the water.
I know, but shouldn't there be, I don't know, chemicals in them that should just get rid of that immediately?
Yeah, lots of chlorine like they used to put in the pools.
Oh, forget
in which you come
it.
Out of a pool and your skin would radiate from chlorine.
Oh my, has anybody else had that problem, I wonder? I'm sure.
No, Carter had. Carter got sick.
Oh, God.
Anyway, let's go to John, who's calling from North Bergen. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Johnny.
Hey, John.
Yeah, I think the waterboarding's fantastic, but I don't want him to go to Gitmo. Send him to Florence where he can be tortured by being alone all day by himself.
The Supermax. Well, yeah, but back in 2004, at Florence in Colorado, back in 2004, the Red Cross went to Gitmo, and they were saying, you know, they kind of did their little survey. They said they were very unhappy with the situation down there. They found that there were humiliating acts being perpetrated against the prisoners. They were in solitary confinement, dealing with temperature extremes, you know, forced temperature extremes, and sitting in forced positions or being, you know, being, I guess, you know, put into forced positions. So would that do it for you?
I still think by himself is better. This way he's not around other screwballs like himself. I'd rather go to Florence.
Well, in Florence, one of his cellmates would be the very guy I referred to, the mastermind of the first World Trade Center blast in 1993, the infamous Ramzi Youssef, who, like three-eyed cousin fornicators, was the cousin of El Said Nasser, who killed Maya Kahani in 1991 in a hotel here, and also the cousin of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed.
KSM.
These are three-eyed cousin fornicators, are they not?
I guess so.
And remember, they all pledged to jump on that Paradise Express, to zoom themselves up to Allah's side, and to have unprotected sex with 72 vessel virgins. Anyway, let's go to Diane calling from Brooklyn. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC.
Hey, Diane.
Guess what? My name is Judy.
Oh, I'm sorry, Judy.
All right, listen. I want this guy dead as a doornail. How much does it cost to keep him alive in the prisons for our taxpayers' money? This murderous piece of you-know-what. He needs to be dead as a doornail. That's what I would
say. Well, we were trying to get some information from him, and then I have no problem with whatever happens to him.
Oh, please. What information do you need to know, Juliet?
very important information. Who he's been talking with, who else he's been socializing with, if he has any information on further attacks, further plans, else.
Well,
you don't think that's something that's necessary to know?
I want to tell you something. I want him dead. That's what I want.
Okay. Right. Well, I understand that, but we got to get
now,
a little
Judy,
By the way, Curtis? Yeah,
yes.
I wish you so much luck for the surgery. I'm so nervous for you.
Don't be nervous. All you do is you're not going to be sitting shiver for me. I'll come out of it. Don't worry about it.
Okay, we're going to pray for you, Curtis.
All right. And just so that you know what the general cost would be, because he would be considered a special prisoner like Ramzi Youssef, like other
major
terrorists.
Money.
You're talking like 250 G's a year just to provide the basics, air sandwiches, unsweetened Kool-Aid. Although, remember, they're going to get halal food. You know, they're going to get special treatment. They get to bow five times a day to Mecca and Medina, trips to the law library.
And if they don't like what's happening, they'll go on a hunger strike like they did back at Guantanamo Bay and get lots of press over that, worldwide press, and then...
And then remember, they all have bad teeth, as you know, those terrorists. So we'll give them new choppers, prosthetics if he's missing an arm or a leg, new eyeballs if all of a sudden, you know, they're without sight. We do that all for you, and then we put you back onto the jihadist battlefield so you can kill more Americans.
Well, Judy was seething with anger, as I could, I think we can all tell. But, you know, she does make a point. I think that whole post process has to be revamped. Putting them in, you need to get that, Curtis.
No, that's okay. It's a bill collected.
Oh, fantastic.
Can I shout across
the room?
You
want me to answer it? I'll answer it for you. I'll handle it.
Let me tell you something. You'll get paid when I get paid.
Are you sure he's not trying to reach me?
No.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, let's go to Cliff, who's calling from New York. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Cliff.
Hey, Cliff.
Hi, Juliet. Hi, Curtis. My brother Stephen Russell was killed. He's a firefighter. He was killed in 911. And my wife entered this in some kind of a lottery for the families of fallen firefighters. And I walked in the house one day. The phone rang. I picked up the phone, and it was Lieutenant Karen Loftus from the Department of Defense. And she says, "You won the lottery." I said, "What lottery is that?" She goes, "Do you want to go to Gitmo?" I says, "Yeah." So we went to Gitmo, me and my wife, with 11 other family members. We flew to Washington on our own nickel. And then from Washington, we were briefed in a conference room as a group, put on a plane.
C-130? Military plane?
No, it was some kind of a... I don't know how they did it, but it was a common seating place. Judge James Paul was also on the flight with a bunch of news people and media people. And we went there, got off the plane. We were taken to a townhouse. And then we were shuttled back and forth to the courtroom every day. Now, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was there. The first time I met him, he had his beard dyed red. We have 19 soldiers carrying their prayer rugs and their Korans for them. They get five breaks a day during the session of court. The last day I was there, I was there 13 hours in court, and they refused to wear the instant translation devices that were provided for them. So at the end of the 13-hour period, you had to they had to repeat the 200 charges against them line by line and translated a little bit at a time. They wouldn't wear the headsets. And one guy made a paper airplane and flew it at us at the window from his desk where he was sitting. So I sit one behind the other, and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's in the front row. So we got 19 soldiers unarmed serving these people. Now, we're providing the defense, and we're also providing the prosecution.
Now, Cliff, let me ask you a question. You mentioned the mastermind, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, dyeing his beard red. I noticed that he has developed many feminine characteristics of late, very unlike his original photographs before the attack of 9/11. Do you think he's become a gender bender on Gitmo?
I would be speculation. I think I was taken to a hilltop where you can, the soldier that was with me says, look, don't make a big deal out of it. Just glance to your left, and that's where they're all being held. And it looked like a day camp to me.
Well, they got the soccer pitch. They just built that for $1 million. They have all the kind of amenities they never had in their third world environments, never had. And we do this all at great taxpayers' expense.
One of the defense lawyers, a woman, is dressed up with like a Muslim.
With a hijab on.
Oh, yeah, the whole getup in black.
Can I ask you, what kind of security was there? I mean, I was just, when I was falling asleep last night, I was just thinking about the attack the other day in New York, and I was thinking, you know, this guy, this hideous monster, this subhuman sitting there, and I'm thinking, if my family member was run over, somebody that I loved, I honestly think that I would be one of those people who would lose my, you know what? And I feel like I would be the one who would be trying to jump over and claw at this guy and just wring his neck with my bare hands. Probably, you know, bailiffs would be coming in and handling it. But, I mean, I just, how did you control yourself? I'm always curious.
I think he's departed us.
Too bad.
It's okay. But he gave us a good personal account.
Very interesting.
Of how the inmates on Gitmo are being treated. And remember, they all follow Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. And again, if you don't know the name, he is the guy who convinced Osama bin Laden to utilize the concept of his cousin, his three-eyed cousin fornicating family member, Ramzi Youssef, who had a plan to fly planes into buildings. He was never able to execute it. He said, look, they tried to blow up the World Trade Center the first time with that Ryder truck that had all the explosives in it. That didn't do it. You got to go the route of flying planes into it. And he eventually convinced Osama bin Laden, and you know the rest of the story.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
77 WABC.
To the phones we go. Juliet Huddy in the house.
Hello, Curtis. Let's go to
Gary in Connecticut. Welcome to WABC, Gary.
Thank you. Hello, guys. How are you?
Hey, Gary.
So basically, I had a really outside the box idea. I'm an old school guy. I'm 50 years old, born and raised in Orange, Connecticut. And I'm an old school guy. You know what we need to do with these individuals is we don't need to waterboard them. We need to park them in a room, and they need to watch repeats of shows like The Brady Bunch, Archie Bunker, all the old Leave It to Beaver, and let them just watch repeat after repeat after repeat.
While blasting Metallica and Iron Maiden in the commercial breaks.
you know, basically what we have is people are missing something. We have these folks that when they were 8 years old, 6 years old, they were young people in a country where they had no food. They were kids that were growing up in a horrible climate, atmosphere.
Well, now, hold on a shelf, Gar. That was not at all true of the close to 20 co-conspirators of the attack of 9/11, mostly Saudis. They grew up in upper middle class households. They were highly educated, well fed, introduced to Western ways of thinking because many of them went to schools outside of the Middle East.
Yeah, post 9/11, you know, and this is why we've seen the rise of ISIS. You have these children who are being trained. We see the videos of these children doing these, you know, these horrible things, the beheadings and so forth.
Although you mentioned playing Metallica, Sandman for sleep deprivation in order to sweat out these prisoners.
Playing it really loud.
No, This is what you play. You play. You recognize that?
No.
This woman drives me insane. Yoko Ono.
Oh.
When John Lennon allowed her to actually do her record productions under his label, and she would be screaming and hollering in banshee wail.
This is pretty bad, but
I'd give up information after 10 minutes of listening to this.
How about that? How about, do you watch The Walking Dead? That one song that they kept on playing? I forget what it was called, but it was like this real happy, upbeat.
Easy Street.
Yeah, stuff like that.
So you'd give up information if you had to listen to Easy Street over and over and over again.
Yeah, yeah, that would do it.
Well, up next, we're going to critique last night's last mayoral debate.
Curtis Sliwa.
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels, was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host. Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
All of the ups and downs of a carousel. But I know so well. Life is a three-ring circus. Just one little ride on a merry-go-round. Going round and round and round
and round. Magic, one of my all-time favorites. Life is a three-ring circus. I think I got married the first time because of a Blue Magic jammy I was listening to and just got all for toots and crossed that Maginot line. Boy, what a mistake that was. But Blue Magic, I definitely love Blue Magic. But this song, as we're high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us for this broadcast by NJDiet.com, Juliet Huddy, I think is synonymous to what we saw round two of the mayoral debates last night. It was a more subdued three-ring circus than the first one that was aired on New York One with shouting, hooting, hollering, and just
mic turning off.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it was... Last night was like, as one Twitter person said, it was like a Saturday Night Live sketch. For me, I honestly felt like I was watching a bad debate in high school, and not a very good high school either. It was like, it looked like a bunch of kids up there.
Well, Juliet, let's go to the audio tape first. Is the pretentious a-hole that he is.
Tell it like it is, baby.
De Blasio telling all of us that people don't really care about pay-for-play or corruption.
I'm sure he feels that way.
People in New York City are plenty smart, Mr. Deedle. They care about the things that matter. They care about the fact that jobs are up. They care about the fact that our graduation rate is up. They care about the fact that our police are driving down crime consistently while improving the relationship between police and community. That's what people talk to me about every single day in this city. They understand these other issues were looked at.
I have to tell you, I was reading the New York Times today. They were making, I won't say they were fawning over de Blasio, but they were making a big point about how he came out, you know, 6'6". He's got this confidence. You know, I implore voters, you complain about the leadership in the city and the corruption in the city and just the swill that goes on in the cesspool of politics. Do something different. Change. Don't vote for somebody because they happen to hold themselves well.
Right, but if your assessment is from the debate, let's just look at the debate last night. There's no doubt in my mind that Mayor de Blasio, as much as I hate him, loathe him, despise him, was better prepared. He was better prepared with the facts. Nicole Malliotakis, not ready for prime time. And then there was Bozo Deedle, you know, who was just doing his Bozo routine. But on the matter of the recent allegations that surfaced in federal court last week by Reichnitz, the cooperator in the case against Norman Seabrook, the crooked union leader of the correctional officers, in which he said, hey, I gave Mayor de Blasio over $100,000. He gave me his private cell number.
Mm-hmm.
I had weekly conversations with him about things that we could do for him so he could do things for us and pay for play. And the mayor was asked last night, are you willing to give up your phone records?
Will you release your phone records to
clear
up any doubt?
This matter has been fully investigated by the federal authorities. They took no further action. This has been covered and covered and covered again. We hold ourselves to a high standard of integrity. We make decisions based on the merits. We always will.
Is that a yes or a no?
And a liar and a felon saying otherwise doesn't change the truth.
Is that a yes or a no on phone records?
Will again, I've said very clearly, I'm not releasing any more information than what we've already provided many times over to the authorities.
Oh, yeah, push for it, Maurice. But the fact is that he still kept going on and on, talking in circles. Why not release the phone? Why not? What is the problem? It makes me feel better. Granted, I'm not a New York City voter, but I definitely spent a lot of time in the city. I'd like to know about how long you spent on the phone. And this, just the fact that you said that you, Mr. de Blasio, the fact that you said that you have hundreds of thousands of people who have your personal email, that doesn't mean that thousands of people are emailing you constantly and having meetings with you constantly via phone and via internet.
Now, there were four debates. Originally, two with the candidate I'm supporting is the New York State Reform Party Chairman, Sal Albanese, who was running for the Democratic primary nod at that time against de Blasio. He lost, but he had two debates. And then there are these two debates. Neither of the candidates brought up to the mayor, why is it you promised you would pay your own legal bills
right
when all these investigations were taking place, and then you flipped the script, and right before the July 4th weekend, you indicated that, no, you would have us, the sucker taxpayers, pay your bills as a result of thinking that would slip through the cracks. And obviously it did, because neither of his adversaries has ever brought it up publicly in those debates.
Well, you know, there's this conventional wisdom that people think, well, you know what, I can be happy with the mayor if things aren't affecting me. You know, I mean, is the corruption really affecting me? The pay for play, is that really affecting me? But the fact is, this is affecting you because your tax dollars are going towards paying for his legal
bills. Well, let's find out.
Period.
For our listeners out there, the mayor has said point blank last night in the debate, as he has said before, you, meaning you people, don't care about corruption. Don't care about pay for play. You're only concerned about paved roads, picking up garbage, public safety.
Well, does he have a point? Because he's leading in the polls. And it looks like it's going to be an annihilation.
Let's find out from our listeners. 1-800-848-WABC. Then there's 1-800-848-9222. And then, last night, Bozo Dito was asked the question.
Don't get me started on this.
That directly impacts you, Juliet Huddy, because you were a number of women over at Fox News Channel who were perved on. And Bo Dito was being used specifically by Roger Ailes to dig up dirt on them. And he was asked that question point blank during the debate.
Thank Mr. Dietl,
yes,
as a private investigator, you were hired to look into the lives of women who accused former Fox News chief Roger Ailes, the late Roger Ailes, of sexual harassment. Why is a woman's personal life relevant to whether she was sexually harassed at work?
First of all, I'm a private investigator. You said it right. I get hired by a law firm to do an investigation. This is my business. It's not that I dislike, I love women. This is a business as a private investigator. And there's no kind of conflict. I'm not against women. And I was never hired by Roger Ailes. I'll say it again. I was hired by the law firm on Park Avenue, Epstein Becker. They hired me for the two cases, and I did the investigation and told the truth.
Well, in typical in these cases like this, yeah, he was hired by sort of an independent law firm who typically, I'm not going to say in the specific instance, I don't know the facts, but I'm guessing that somebody at Fox News, maybe perhaps the legal counsel at the time, Diane Brandy, you know, talk to these people, this firm, about talking to Bo Dietl, who had a very good relationship with Fox News Channel. I interviewed him many, many times, and you know, he was in and out of the different studios on a frequent basis, and seemed to have a very good relationship with some of the management at my former employer.
Oh, very great relationship, to the point where he is so deep in the dark side of what was being done there against women that he is no longer on the Fox News channel.
Think about it. Gretchen Carlson, Andrea Macris. Andrea Macris was the one back in the early 2000s who accused Bill O'Reilly of sexual sexual harassment, and she received a very large settlement. Gretchen Carlson received a very large settlement from Roger Ailes himself. I do want to just say very quickly that I grew up, my father was very close friends with Roger Ailes and was a consultant for Fox News Channel. So I knew Roger Ailes as a kid knew, you know, a guy that was, you know, was a part of like a family. I knew him that way. I didn't know any of this stuff was going on at the time. So that's a whole other story.
Why ask an even broader question here about Bozo Dietl's campaign? He's raised $1 million to date. Keeps bragging about that. That's why he was permitted in the debate. Mm-hmm. He raised $1 million, and he did, according to the CFB, which is the Campaign Financial Board.
Right.
Have you seen any TV commercials on?
Well, I was saying, no, I actually didn't. You asked me that earlier. I said, no, I didn't. I thought, well, am I just being, you know, am I not caught up on current events? Because I haven't. No, I haven't. I haven't seen.
Have you heard any radio advertisements?
Not a single thing.
No.
Now, where that money needs to be used up.
Well,
I mean,
you would say you raised $1 million, but what have you spent it on? He's got a van with his face on it. His headquarters is in his business office, which is right here in the Madison Square Garden complex. I've seen him with 6 campaign workers. I'm sure they get paid some shekels.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe most of the money has gone to his campaign manager, John Hagerty.
Why would you say that?
Well, because John Hagerty ended up going to prison when he was helping the campaign to reelect Mayor Michael Bloomberg because he ripped off $750,000.
It's interesting.
From Michael Bloomberg.
That he would hire this guy.
And he went upstate for that,
huh?
Right near Plattsburgh.
So why would a guy like that, who's gone to prison for that type of thing, be allowed back into a political campaign?
Well, we need to ask Bo Dietl, and also Bo, where did all the money go?
Where did the money go, Bo?
And you know what's going to happen after November 7th, when all the votes are tallied? I'm going to the Campaign Financial Board, and I'm going to demand an investigation. Where is Bo's money? It's supposed to have been invested in the campaign. He's not spending it on a campaign headquarters because it's in his business office. He's got the one van with his face on it. He's got the Big Bird who walks around with him, you know, that he imitates his Big Bird, de Blasio. 6 campaign workers and the crook, John Hagerty, who's his campaign manager, who obviously ripped off Bloomberg, went to jail for it.
So he cavorts with criminals. He has further victimized people who have been victimized by sexual harassment by trying to dig up and, you know, basically engage in black ops campaigns to try to discredit them. And we don't know where the money that he's raised has gone.
No, it's certainly not going to TV advertising. He's running out of time, right? The election is Tuesday.
Maybe he can call in. I know he's frequented other shows.
Oh, no, he's banned from here.
Oh. Right.
I mean, he walks in.
Can he call me?
No. He walks in on Imus all the time. He walks in on Bernard McGurk and Sid Rosenberg like he owns the place. He ain't walking in on Curtis Sliwa. I'll knock his lights out.
Oh, yeah. Bring it on.
And he
can
pull his toolie out on me and stick it in my face.
You
know, and I'll knock him out right in his place.
You know what I'll do? I'll stand behind you and I'll go, yeah.
You know, no. He doesn't run WABC, that's for sure. The suits may let him get away with that, but Curtis Sliwa won't.
No, you will
1-800.
Not. 1-800. I won't either, Curtis.
848-WABC. That's 1-800-848.
Dietl.
Yeah, Bernard McGurk and Sid Rosenberg.
Where'd the money go, Bo?
They're like Bo Dietl's Maytags.
Oh, stop.
Bo wants to come on. Oh, let him on, right? Meantime, they don't ask these kind of questions. Bo, where's the money? $1 million. No TV ads.
Bo.
No radio ads.
Knowing that...
You hired a crook, John Hagerty, as your campaign manager, who took $750,000 from Michael Bloomberg's campaign. Went upstate. Remember the prison the two guys broke out of?
Yes.
He did time in that prison in Plattsburgh.
And knowing what you know now about... people at Fox News that you were, I guess, apparently working on behalf of in some way, shape, or form. Knowing what you know now, don't you think you should be doing some apologizing?
And why is he banned from the Fox News channel and not banned from WABC?
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Ms. Malia Takis, you constantly quote statistics that sex crimes against women in New York City are up some 25% to 30%, but the NYPD says it's up only 4%.
No,
so that's what they say, though. That's what they say. So what do you know that the NYPD does not know?
That is not correct. 4% is rape is the increase. Over the last 3 years, felony sex crimes in our city have increased 25%, and that is straight from CompStat. It's straight from CompStat. I could show you after the show.
Those are different
statistics. It's been a 25% increase in felony sex crimes, and I will show you on the CompStat website after the show. The 4%.
That's a state report. These are NYPD stats.
No.
Those are different numbers.
No, that is rape. Rape has gone up 4%.
Those are sex crimes.
Okay. Felony sex crimes have gone up in this city by 25% over the last three years. CompStat, and I ask everyone to check CompStat and look from 2013, which was the last year that Mayor Bloomberg was in office, to this past year, 2016, and you will see that there is a 25% increase in felony sex crimes. Okay.
So you see how I say that Nicole Malliotakis, the Republican conservative candidate, assemblywoman from Brooklyn and Staten Island, is not ready for prime time because...
Well, she kept her cool. I will say that. I mean, and you know, you could hear the sneering by Maurice Dubois, but I didn't think she lost it completely.
No, but she got spun like a top. And had she done her homework, she would have found, and I would have been more than happy to give her this information, is that sex crimes are up in the subways 20% the last 2 years. And that includes people perving women, dropping their drawers, showing that they don't have erectile dysfunction because their staff is all of a sudden turgid, weenie waving.
God, I mean,
all these perverted things that they get misdemeanor charges on, and they don't get charged with felonies as they do above ground. So, for instance, if you wanted to find out a perv in your neighborhood, of which there might be many, Juliet, you would go to a registry and you would see it online.
Right.
There is no registry for those who commit these perversions in the subway, of which there are many, because the MTA and the transit police won't do that. So she wasn't aware of this. Instead of fighting a point that obviously she was going to lose, she should have just given it up and moved on.
Well, I don't think she thought she was going to lose it because I don't think she understood what she what was going on. I think she was thinking one specific thing. She
not
was being
ready,
myopic,
not ready for prime time.
Just the statistics here. Felony sex crimes rose to 1,336 in 2016 from 1,073 in 2013, according to police statistics.
Right, but the point should have been, she should have just said something that has been written about a lot and broadcast a lot, that sex crimes in the subways have been up 20% each of the last 2 years, and she would have been on safe ground. But let's go to Don, who's calling from Inwood. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Don?
Hey, guys. How are you? Don from Inwood. I hope today brings you relief from your chronic pain. I think about you a lot, pal.
Oh, thank you, Don.
I saw the debate last night. I really looked forward to it. I think Bo Dietl, for whatever capacity he has, I called his secretary last week and spoke for a half an hour with her about how much we love Bo Dietl, the person, but that he has to stop being a pit bull at these things or he's never going to get anywhere. I thought him and the young woman presented themselves very nicely, and it's simply because Big Bird is a liar. Big Bird... Actually, if you want to translate to the masses that he governs, and I hate to say it, but my fellow human beings must be pretty stupid, because what he says to them is, listen, you're all idiots. Mm-hmm. Don't bother me with your crap. I'll take care of everything. And please, I don't want to be bothered with your crap.
That's right, exactly
but,
it.
But Don, this is the problem. We know the crook that we have as mayor. There's no doubt he's deep into pay for play. But if you're going to replace that crook, people want to know, who are you? Nicole Malliotakis has not made that case. We know very little about her. We don't know what her vision is. What is she going to do if she becomes mayor? And certainly with Bozo Dietl, you know, it's all about him being a caricature and not being a serious candidate. What is your vision, Bo? Who are you? What is your background other than being a detective on the NYPD for many years?
His intention is to get attention with his wild sound bites and his just buffoon behavior.
Well, last night they were calmer, everyone. So you were able to actually hear more of the back and forth. And a lot of that is due to the fact you didn't have the audience there. See, the audience fed the beast last time around. You had the supporters for de Blasio, Malliotakis, and Bo Dietl feeding the beast. And between them screaming and hollering at the New York One debate, and then the candidates yelling at one another, you couldn't hear any of the interaction.
But, I mean, I listen to some of the things Mr. Dietl says. I mean, first of all, the grammar is just it's atrocious. some of the things he says, they just don't make any sense. I can't understand what he's saying. He has the Boisms where he's making up all these words. And you know, you think about the fact that how many intelligent people have been schooled, gone to these fantastic Ivy League universities with these brilliant educations, and, you know, should be able to stand there and be able to, as you said, come up with a vision and speak articulately.
I would actually disagree with you. The last thing in the world that I want as mayor of the city of New York is a graduate from an Ivy League school.
I have no problem with Ivy League graduates. I want somebody who is
Barack
intelligent,
Obama,
who is thoughtful,
and we've had Donald
and
Trump,
who has character
and I've
and
had it with the Ivy League, and everyone in the United States Supreme Court is an Ivy League graduate.
Okay, how about just a good state school? Well, you know what? My point is that somebody who can get up has a great education.
High school dropout is capable of dealing with it as long as they're cool, calm, and collected, and they study the issues and don't just fire off hot, heated rhetoric.
I agree.
Because they don't know the issues.
Why don't you run? Why are you not running?
Well, maybe in 4 years.
Oh.
Get the breaking news, Senator Bryan.
Hold on a second.
Maybe in 4 years.
Hold on a second. Let me tell you, buddy. I will be your campaign manager.
Did you not agree that I could do a lot better than Nicole Malliotakis
and Bo
Dietl?
I do. You know more about this city than anybody knows. But, you know, all three of those people together, plus, you know, the entire city council and pretty much, you know, every other administration.
Well, the thing that I know.
Let me finish. Yes. I want to give you this compliment. But you also, you are so in touch with people. And the other thing is you have been so transparent about your mistakes in your life. You have no problem admitting the things that you've screwed up on. You have no problem talking. I mean, you are so transparent. You're so authentic. People know who you are. I like you. I think you're a great guy. I mean, I can't stand you, of course, but I do. I respect the hell out of you. And
campaign
you would
manager,
be an amazing. Well, we don't always love the people that we respect. You know, no, I'm only kidding. But you would be an amazing mayor.
You would put
every single iota of your love and energy into the city and to helping the people in the city.
That's the last compliment I'll ever get from you.
It's very true.
But the best thing I could add to this.
I actually get sick now that I just said that.
All these politicians know that I know where all their bones are buried and who buried them.
Even better.
That's right. So they can't play with me like they play with everyone else.
But can we do a write-in campaign? I mean, this could actually happen. I'm telling you right now.
You think people could spell Sliwa? S-L-I-W-A?
I will be out at every single voting booth screaming your name.
Campaign manager, Julia.
I'm not kidding.
But anyway,
I need a job. This could be it.
Ken Duffy.
How soon
news headlines.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa. 77 WABC.
Oh, man. Whoa.
The parade of pervs continues.
Now we have a second accuser against Dustin Hoffman saying that he harassed her. And this is just one day after he was forced to apologize for behavior from a long time ago.
Now, which Dustin Hoffman is this? Is this the star of Tootsie? Is this the star of The Graduate? Which Dustin Hoffman is this?
I'm looking at this. Well, this one now, this person, Riz Gatsiunas, says that she had been set up for a meeting with Dustin Hoffman and a screenwriter from Tootsie. So it was post-Tootsie. So how old was he then?
Maybe the Falkers. He was perving on Barbara Streisand.
Yeah, I don't know. This is about this woman, I guess, had a film adaptation. But anyway, this woman was in her 20s. And again, this is the second woman who has come about. She says that he asked right off the bat in this meeting whether she had sex with a man over 40. And he, you know, then did some touching on her. And this is like our little angel, Dustin Hoffman. What has happened here?
He's a tookish grabber. I'm going to give the details of what a young lady at the time said about him. She was just interning on a movie set, and he was perving her and perving others. But this in addition to the fact that Kevin Spacey, who perved women, perved men, perved boys. He scored the trifecta of perversion, the trinity, the troika of perversion.
Okay, gotcha.
Has now signed up to the Harvey Weinstein.
Harvey.
academy in Arizona, you know, where you go for sex sex withdrawal and sex rehab.
Well, he was in and out of there quick.
Well, one week.
Yeah. I mean, and it was like a day patient type of thing.
Right. Well, now,
every once you could go back to a hotel, which
now,
is a perfect place.
Now Kevin Spacey is attending that same sex rehab clinic in Arizona, yes.
Okay, so we know that he's not taking it seriously.
Well,
how could he be taking it seriously if this is an outpatient thing? Don't you have to go to rehab and spend, you know, 30 or whatever, however many days there, taking yourself out of the world to focus?
You know, there are some of our listeners themselves who have been sex addicts. You know, this goes back, I'll never forget, watching the Phil Donahue show when he was prime time, you know, in the late afternoons. And Wade Boggs, all-star third baseman at the time, yeah, for the Boston Red Sox, soon to become a Yankee, was on the stage saying, I'm a sex addict. It's the first time I ever heard that, because he claimed that he had insatiable appetite to have sex morning, noon, and night, and he was going away to some sex rehab clinic. And then, obviously, since, we've seen Tiger Woods go that route. We've seen Brett Favre, the great quarterback for the Green Bay Packers, go that route, a whole host of others. And, naturally, Anthony, the perv wiener, although he also went like 1 week to a sex rehab clinic in North Carolina. Remember, he was riding horses.
And then
all of a sudden he was back in New York, perving again.
Well, I mean, remember, these are guys who have made millions of dollars, who have had just incredible amounts of power and access to whatever and whoever they want. And they're not used to being told no. They're not used to having to, you know, perhaps stay in a dormitory and share a room with somebody else. And that's what you have to do when you go to these serious rehab places.
Well,
so
going
to the Ritz at night is not my idea of taking your rehab seriously.
Let's open up our phone lines on, Dustin Hoffman, Tootsie, who's the latest perv in this parade of pervs.
Alleged perv.
Oh, he's a perv. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-WABC. But, you know, I'm thinking there are two images I have of Dustin Hoffman.
Mm-hmm.
One, obviously, of Tootsie, because that was a major breakthrough role, you know, gender bender role.
Right.
And the second was, a lot of people don't realize this, he was in the townhouse in Greenwich Village next to the Weatherman's bomb factory.
Oh, you're kidding me.
That they blew to smithereens because they malfunctioned the manufacturing of bombs. So the whole townhouse was blown off of its foundations. People were killed there. Others fled.
Right.
And Dustin Hoffman, the famous front page, because I delivered the newspaper that day, was Dustin Hoffman peering over the railing of his brownstone townhouse to the hole in the ground next door.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, let me give you the
details. That's fascinating.
Anna Graham Hunter, she was 17 when Hoffman began harassing her on the set.
Of what?
Of the Death of the Salesman. So she's there to bring him breakfast each morning, and he's grabbing her tuchus, and he's perving on her. And then one day, in front of his entourage, she says, Mr. Hoffman, what would you like for breakfast today? He says, I'll have a hard-boiled egg and a soft-boiled clitoris.
Oh, lovely.
His entire entourage burst out laughing. The 17-year-old girl was just shocked, horrified. And she said, and then he continued to perv on me every day after. And another female intern, he couldn't stop grabbing our tuchuses.
So he goes for the really young ones, because the second person said that she was in her 20s. Early 20s. So he went for the real, real young ones. And how old was he at this point?
Well, he's not 80 like he is now.
Well, yeah.
But he was in his 40s.
And who were these people? Who was this group of people that were bursting into fits of laughter?
You know, his groupies.
His sycophants.
Entourage, right.
Yeah, yeah. The people who lionize him, the sheep.
Right. Mm-hmm. And naturally, they get paid to laugh.
To keep their mouths shut.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, our number is 1-800-848-WABC as the parade of pervs continues.
Well, let's go to Danny Masterson now has four women who have accused him of rape. Remember, he was on... first of all, Scientologist, and three of these women are Scientologists. He was from that 70s show.
Wow, and he's not gay. That's surprising, because we know with Travolta and Cruz, the reason they're Scientologists is they're covering up their gay lifestyle. Yeah. Anyway, let's go to Phil in Branchville, New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC, Phil.
Hey, guys. Like Juliet was touching on, that they're not really serious. I'm 100% convinced that the only reason any of them go to any sex rehab is to rehab their reputation.
Yeah.
That's it. They know exactly what they are. They know what they do. They enjoy doing it. They'll keep on doing it. But they went to rehab, so they're serious. That's baloney.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, I know that there are people who have gone to sex rehab and they swear by it. I personally just find it just an excuse. It's one of those weak, you know, I want to have an excuse to be able to continue to be, you know, alleged to cheat on my wife, to, you know.
Is it sort of like Pavlov's dogs, in which there's behavior modification, in which they strap electrodes to your gonads so that every time you have a sexual thought, you get shock therapy, and it obviously would definitely have an impact on you having that urge to merge.
I don't know. If there's somebody who is a sex therapist out there, why don't you give us a call? I'm guessing that's not what they do at these rehabs, but you never know. I don't know.
Well, I would think there's got to be some severe form of behavioral modification.
No, I don't know.
There's pain compliance.
No.
Because, look, they get pleasure when all of a sudden they perv on women or men or boys or girls.
But
right?
That's like, yeah, but you don't have any sort of, you know, electrodes put up against any sort of parts of your body when you are a drug addict or you're an alcoholic.
No,
and you go to these rehabs.
I think it's different.
It's about learning how to deal with the problems with inside you, you know, the emotion, the thing
I'm looking
that happened
for
when
a shortcut.
You're 16.
I'm looking for
okay,
a shortcut.
Well, okay, so you're suggesting we do this.
Yeah, a little Delco battery, you know, wire it up
okay,
a bit,
well,
you know, and then just crank it up, attach it to the guy's gonads, and I guarantee you he won't be perving many women thereafter.
Probably not. Probably not. I'm not sure that this is going to go over so well with the medical community, but you never know.
Hey,
you never know.
We were talking about waterboarding for Uzbeki boy in Gitmo, right? Why not a little pain compliance?
Hey,
to offset the pleasure that these pervs
well,
get
because
from
these
acts.
These people are voluntarily going into rehab to, as our previous caller said, to rehab their
let's see if
reputation.
There are any experts out there, those who have gone through the process, or sex therapists who have actually administered a therapy that can get somebody back on track so then they're not perving the world.
Yeah, no clowns calling in, please. Like if there's somebody legit out there who can give us enlighten us on this, we would love that. That would be fantastic. By the way, so it's Kevin Spacey, Dustin Hoffman, besides the other well publicized folks, the guy from NPR, Brett Ratner, the director, Jeremy Piven from Entourage now, Danny Masterson. I mean, the list just goes on and on.
I call
on.
It the Parade of Pervs. 1-800-848-WABC. To the phones we go. It's Sarah from Huntington. Welcome to WABC, Sarah.
Hey, Sarah.
Hi, how are you?
Great. What's going on?
Oh, I wanted to answer some of your questions. I am a psychotherapist, and I do see sex addiction in an outpatient setting periodically.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be happy to answer some of your questions about, you know, the basic treatment for that. And I do have to say, what you were talking about was an aversion. It's basically aversion therapy when there's some kind of shock or negative consequence.
Right.
And as far as I know, unless something different is being done in, you know, some kind of experimental setting, that's not the norm. It's not a situation, where people are being harmed or shocked.
So what happens when a person, let's say like Harvey Weinstein or Dustin Hoffman in this case, goes to a rehab facility for sexual, proclivities? What?
We see you asked such a long question.
I'm sorry.
Unfortunately,
we're out of time. This was such a great question.
See, you're a yenta.
Can we save her?
You're a yenta.
Can we save her for next?
Curtis Lewa.
Boom!
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Lewa
from
the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Lewa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Lewa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host. Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
How good is this one?
Yeah. It makes the headbangers ball here.
Yes, it's good. This is a band called Nonpoint. I'm actually friends with a couple of them. Great band. Great band.
Brian Mongalucci, hipster millennial who I hate, I loathe, I despise, with your skinny jeans, your man bun, and your Converse sneakers. Would you send me the link to this song here, please? Make yourself useful there behind the bulletproof glass. The only thing that separates me from strangling the life out of you.
The bullet with a name on it could not get through the bulletproof glass.
But we are Hyatt Tom Madison Square Garden, the great facilities that are provided to us in order to do this broadcast to all of you with the 50,000 powerful watts of sound by NJDiet.com. Juliet Huddy, musical director in the house.
Oh, yes. Do you like the musical changes that have been occurring here?
Yeah. We hadn't had enough real heavy metal.
And you liked it. I mean, you like the songs that are kind of driving and fast. You're not really into the groove metal.
No, but so then much. Again, notice we went from the very sedate, loving R&B classic Blue Magic.
I'd never heard that song before.
Classic. And then to this heavy metal bangers ball, what can we say?
Ball.
Anthem.
Yeah.
It's really an anthem.
Yeah. Bullet with a name on it. It's an angry, angry song. Which leads into...
Well, that typifies me. I'm the angry bird.
I figured that's why you like the song.
I'm angry, that's for sure. Remember, I don't forgive, I don't forget.
Yeah, well, I can see. I saw the way you got when we were talking about one Bo Dietl.
You mean Bozo Dietl.
Woo, baby.
Oh, absolutely.
Man,
I mean, kick his butt if he ever comes up here and just thinks he can Bogart this studio.
I'm not encouraging, you know, fisticuffs, but, I mean, should there be?
Yeah, he's got a gun. You know, he walks around with the Thule on his side.
Well, I'll take care of that. I'll handle
that. Makes him a tough guy.
He won't walk in. It'll be a fair fight.
Yeah, go ahead. Come with your Thule. We'll see what you're gonna get here. But meantime.
Where'd the money go, Bo?
I understand that you are a fair weather friend to the United States of America.
Well, I wouldn't say I'm fair weather.
Well,
I would just say.
I'll tell you why.
Okay, why?
You use terms like the loo when you know it's a turlet.
Well, I'm actually an Anglophile, so I study anything I possibly can about the UK, specifically England. I know I'm obsessed with the royalty, monarchy. I mean, I love their British history.
Really?
My ancestor, the great Captain Joshua Huddy of Colts Neck, New Jersey. A Revolutionary War hero, a scamp and a scoundrel, but a hero nonetheless, was killed by the British. He was actually hung by the British at down there by Red Bank, Rumson, Seabright area. He jumped off a British ship. I mean, this guy. But I'm fascinated by those people.
So I don't understand. Your lineage suggests that you.
Well, he was more of an Irish dude, I think. So, but I know, and you would think that I would hate, loathe, and despise
the Union Jack.
But I don't.
I'll give you an example. You mentioned New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
At the time that Benjamin Franklin was flying his kite with a key on it outside of Philadelphia, mm-hmm. where he and the founding fathers were working furiously to come up with the documents that we just are so engaged in as we speak, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights.
The Declaration of Independence.
Right. You mm-hmm. know that as he was there flying that kite with the key on it, his son had been appointed the royal governor of the state of New Jersey by the king in England.
Yes.
And he was given the edict to go find your father and hang him from the nearest pole.
Yes, I know. I know. It's amazing that you know this stuff. But of course you would know this stuff because you are familiar with what goes on in this tri-state area.
But that's
much more so than anywhere.
I hate the Brits. I really hate the Brits. And I really hate Europe.
I
with a passion.
I am disgusted by that. I will tell you that there is so much ignorance in this country, and one of the big reasons for that, and I'm very sincere when I say this, is that people have not seen the outside and the confines of this country. They need to go. They need to travel. If you travel, you know, no offense to the Caribbean, but take your next vacation that you've been saving up for. Don't go down to Disney World. I'm sorry. Go to Europe and meet the people over there. Go to St. Petersburg, Russia, if you can scrape up the, you know, the rubles. And really meet these people and talk to these people. You start to see other cultures. You see the way they behave. You realize you're not going to be a target the second you show up because you're an American.
Well, let's go on a tourist guide now.
Okay.
I am an
expert because I have traveled extensively.
You don't want us to go to Disney World where people are walking around with two of those humongous turkey legs in their hands as they're getting ripped off from ride to ride.
Well, you can actually have a cheaper vacation if you do travel to Europe. I mean, compared to going down to Disney World. It's outrageously expensive.
Pick a European country.
Okay. Italy.
Italy, okay.
Yes.
All right. And why Italy?
Well, first of all, the history is incredible. It's beautiful. The people are wonderful. The food is fantastic. You know, you have to, the art, I mean, I don't know if you've been to Italy. I would imagine you probably have. You go to Florence and you're literally walking through a museum. It's actually the streets of Florence. Same thing with Venice, really. I mean, you're walking through these tiny little cobblestone alleyways that are, they're not streets because you can't have cars or bikes or anything like that. And you sense the way people lived. Hundreds and hundreds of years ago.
Well, I went to Italy, and I actually have a number of groups, 9 Guardian Angel groups in Italy.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, and even in nearby Sardinia, right off the coast.
Where are they mainly centralized?
Milan, Bologna, then they work their way, right. They work their way down, right off.
Naples, I would imagine.
Right, even in now Sicilia.
Sicilia.
That's right, Sicily.
Oh.
But the reason I don't like Italy is when I visited the Vatican. I was so turned off.
Because it's a commercial. I mean, the second you walk in, well, actually, it's when you're leaving, you have to go through the gift shop. It's just like, wait, what?
Not even just to look at all the wealth and the riches that are accumulated in that country, the Vatican State.
Well, it's its own, little world.
And then
there.
To realize back here, they're closing Catholic schools throughout the archdiocese that are desperately needed in the poor and impoverished communities.
But that's the Vatican. That's not Italy.
Yeah, but that's symbolic of Italy. So I'm turned off. How about Denmark? Denmark, because people are saying, Denmark, they're so much better than us.
Denmark, Norway, Sweden always come up in the top 5 happiest places to live in the world.
First off, there are higher suicide rates there than anywhere else. It's dark. It's dank. It's always, it's so damp. You feel it right into the marrow of your bone.
People there
countries.
Live longer. They tend to have more friends. Their social connections are stronger, they say. They seem to experience more generosity and are more generous. They feel that they have a freedom, a liberalism, you know, kind of do what you want. Do you. Is that the sort of the kids saying, the hipsters saying, they don't have a sense like most of us do that our leaders are corrupt and are trying to lead us into a dark place. They actually feel like they're progressive. They're moving forward and they seem to have a decent amount of money in their pockets.
Their food sucks. Lutefisk and Fisker balls is maybe some of the most horrible food that I've ever had in my life.
Well, first of all, you can have, Indonesian food. When we went to Amsterdam, some of the best food I've ever had in my life was in Amsterdam. Indonesian food is fantastic. I mean, you know, I'm not really into the shark, you know, the dilled shark. What's it called? Like those little shark bits. And it's like fermented shark. God, you're looking at me like I'm crazy.
Fermented shark.
Yeah, fermented shark. They eat that there.
Well, you know, in Denmark.
In Iceland, actually.
Citizens are paid to go to college. They have free health care. They get 10 months of paid maternity and paternity leave. And they're entitled to a complete funded retirement. That is a complete socialized state. Is that what you would prefer?
I would like little bits and pieces of that. I would.
Well, let's find out from our many listeners there. 1-800-848-WABC. Our diva girl, Juliette Huddy, would prefer the lutefisk and Fisker balls of the Scandinavian countries.
Well, I really haven't traveled Scandinavia. I have traveled Italy, France, Spain, Croatia, Montenegro.
We've got to take you to Oslo and Norway, where I've been, spent a lot of time in Sweden, not Finland, although you should go there with the squareheads.
I'd love to go to Finland. I mean, very easily over to St. Petersburg.
Right, you've been to Holland, obviously, Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. Did you go to Rotterdam? You would have had a completely different opinion.
Why would you say that?
Why?
I heard Rotterdam is fantastic.
No, I didn't like Rotterdam at all.
Why not? Give me a reason.
Dope fiends everywhere. Oh, you go to the central station. I'm not talking about guys smoking dopes of rope, hashish, or marijuana. I'm talking about mainlining. I mean, using heroin, snorting it, smoking it, and injecting it. Oh, yeah, they got a lot of junkies over there.
Well, they they have, you know, they're very liberal. I'm not saying that I like everything about that, but I do like a lot of the things.
Well, let's find out from our many listeners here.
Danny.
You sound like you're ready to pack your bags and head to Europe.
Hey, listen.
Good riddance.
I knew if I said that, I knew that I'd hear the good riddance thing. And you know what? I wouldn't mind going over there for a few years.
1-800-848-WABC. Maybe we could arrange that and swap somebody who's so desperate to get here to the United States.
Like I said, I don't want to go to Scandinavia necessarily. I would prefer perhaps.
How about
maybe,
Iceland?
No, Iceland.
I mean, that's
for me.
A big tourist area now,
I'm not
Iceland, because
really,
of
no,
cheap flights.
That's, you're talking about 20 hours a day of light. Yeah, that's not really. I mean, I'd like to travel there just for a few days, but no, I'm talking about London. I'd like to live in England. I wouldn't mind living in Spain.
1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Danny in New York. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Danny.
Hey, guys. Just want to make a comment about, you know, Norway and this, like, the Norwegians and how they're so great with healthcare. We have to keep in mind of what the racial background is of these countries. They're predominantly white European.
Yes, true.
As opposed to U.S. has a diverse racial ethnicity, we have blacks, we have Mexicans, we have.
No, you make a good point. The homogenous societies, a lot of, and we were talking about that actually with our producer, a lot of homogenous societies are the happiest societies.
Yeah, Danny,
I'm talking about more about the health. We have, like you say, blacks have more propensity to have high blood pressure. You don't have that in the Norwegian countries because there's not a lot of blacks there.
Danny, when is the last time that you were in a Scandinavian country or Denmark or Holland? Do you realize how many North Africans as refugees have poured into that area? They've even come in through Russia in order to get into Finland.
Do you know where they're put, though? Do you know where they're put? They're put in camps.
No. What are you talking about? They're in Malmo. They're in Gothenburg. They're in Stockholm in Sweden.
Gothenburg.
You have no idea what you're talking about, Danny. The whole makeup of Europe is changing. It is still predominantly white.
All right, well, Curtis, let me ask you.
Those countries have changed enormously.
But what is the percentage?
I can't give you the exact percentage, but the growing number of...
Do you agree it's like less than 20%?
No. No. Hold on a second.
Let me do the Googles.
No longer. France, Belgium. Let's go right on through it. Spain. No. It's no longer 20%.
I'm sorry, I'm Googling.
That was maybe 10 years ago.
So wait, what would you like me to ask, Danny, specifically?
What is the percentage of blacks and Mexicans and other...
Blacks and Mexicans? Well, how about minorities? I didn't run across one Mexican in Denmark, in Copenhagen.
Okay, hold on. I'm doing the Googles.
North Africans,
so you guys
Arabs.
Entertain yourselves.
Bosnian.
How's your day been?
Herzegovians, Yugoslavians.
There are certain races that have a propensity of other types of afflictions just due to their race and diet.
Okay, here we go. I got it, people.
Go ahead. What did you do? You Googled it?
It's hard to see this. Let's see.
Hold on.
89 or 69
Danish
origin.
Why don't you figure it out, and when we come back, we'll break down the statistics.
Okay.
Our number's 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
77 WABC.
Take that, Juliet Huddy.
I love America. I love my country.
Was a song done by Patrick Juvet, a Frenchman, in honor of America.
America. Oui, Patrick Juvet.
You know, you're sounding like Pauline Frommer, who hosts, she's the hostess, actually, of the travel show on Saturdays right after Joan Hamburg.
I would love to meet her.
You know, maybe you can contribute to the Frommer's travel guide.
Could you hook that up?
Huh?
Oh, my God, I would love that.
So you were going to give us the stats.
Okay, the stats.
You came up with, in terms of the percentages of immigrants in some of these
specifically
countries.
Specifically in Denmark. We chose Denmark.
Right.
2017.
Right.
86.9%, so essentially 87% of those living in Denmark are of Danish descent.
So 13% are
immigrants, mostly coming from Poland, Turkey, Germany, Iraq, and other such places.
Yeah, North Africa. We forgot North Africa. But anyway, let's go if we can to Antonio, who's calling all the way from Texas.
Hey.
Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Antonio.
Hey, Curtis. I love you, man. But I didn't really get the gist of the whole conversation, but I did listen to Juliet Juddy. Sorry if I didn't pronounce your last name.
That's okay.
Huddy, about her mentioning about people need to get out and travel more. I totally agree with that. I mean, you know, we all love the States and everything, but there's nothing wrong from learning from other countries and experiencing those countries. There's a lot of great things out there in Europe. I've traveled all over Europe myself, and just there's nothing wrong with it. You love America and at the same time enjoy the rest of the world at the same time.
Yeah,
I think that's what she was trying to say. I'm not sure.
That's absolutely what I was trying to say. And I went on a cruise for my honeymoon, and we met tons of people from Scotland and England and you know also Australia, and they all had so many questions about the United States. And so it's not just you know going over there and trying to be less myopic about your own country. It's letting other people know about who you are and who we are as people.
And they all admire America, too, by the way. So it's not like...
They do. I mean, you know, I can't tell you how many people, pretty much everybody that we talked to said, oh, God, we'd love to go to New York. Oh, New York. And I'm thinking, hey, listen, I'd love to go to, you know, Sydney. Come on, visit New York. I mean, it's a wonderful city. I mean, I think, you know, the media, internationally, the media also kind of gives us a bad rap.
Well, you know something, Juliet Huddy, you're a real Paul Manafort. Maybe you'll end up with three passports under fake names.
Well, you have to pay a lot of money. It's, citizenship by investment. I'm not exactly rolling in the dough right now.
I understand that, but I'm just suggesting that maybe you too will end up with three passports like Manafort.
That'd be fantastic. If Malta wants to give me a passport, Cyprus, I'll take that too.
Malta, oh, you could become knighted as a...
Malta.
Well, I'm thinking, hold on.
No, you're right. You're right. Former...
The Knights of Malta.
Oh, yes.
Baron Miguel Cicluna. Oh, slowly I turn step by step to the old WWF of Vince McMahon Sr.
Oh, boy.
Baron Miguel Cicluna. I wonder how many people remember him in the ring against Bruno Sammartino.
Was he Maltese?
Well, they obviously
no,
everybody
but I mean,
played
okay,
a role.
So was the role, like, was he from Malta?
It was like Killer Kowalski. Was he really from Poland?
Well, you know what I'm asking, though. Was it Malta? Because, I mean, you know, many people over here, they're not familiar with Malta.
See, when he was introduced in the ring, they would say, Baron Miguel Cicluna, who is a member of the Knights of Malta. And everybody would go, oh, that's so prestigious.
It is.
As he would take on Bruno Sammartino, the hero of my grandfather, Fidel Bianchino. Would listen to him speak in Italian as he would put the Sicilian backbreaker on Baron Miguel Cicluna, who would then tap out. See?
Well, thank you for that. Rather than talk about the actual legitimate history of Malta, no, we had to get into the WWF.
Well, I'll tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, if you want real travel show guide information, don't depend on Juliet the Diva Huddy.
No, do depend on me. I know what I'm talking about. Believe me.
Listen,
I know what I'm talking about.
Listen to Pauline Fromers, the Fromers Travel Show.
If she's
Saturdays,
listening right now.
Right after the dame, the grand dame of talk radio, Joan Hamburg. In fact, Pauline comes on at 3.
Oh,
but right now, Pauline, it's time for us to get news
we'll
headlines
work for free.
And updates from Ken Duffy.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
.238. That's the old Kool in the Gang, not the new Jacks. They were from Jersey City. Papa Kool Bell, and they were followers of Screwy Louis Farrakhan. And still, I like their music, even though I detest, despise,
and loathe
Screwy Louis Farrakhan of the Nation of Islam.
Well, thank you for playing that. Why? What was the point of playing that song specifically? I know you have lots of, you know.
Well, tomorrow.
You're the Segway King.
Will be one of those few times that you're not going to hear Curtis Lewa here at WABC. I will have boarded a jet in the early morning hours with Nancy Regula, my girlfriend.
I just looked at a picture of Nancy Regula.
Yes.
I'm very impressed, Curtis.
Well, thank you.
How in the hell did this happen?
Thank you.
She's quite cute.
I've lucked out.
You have very much liked her. No wonder you're always drooling about her.
We will be flying to Denver, Colorado, where I have a Guardian Angel chapter, but not for that reason. I mean, I could have gone on Saturday if I was just there to meet with the Guardian Angel chapter.
Yes.
But tomorrow night is the debut of the Guardian Angel documentary for the very first time. It's about my life and the Guardian Angels. It's called Vigilante.
This is incredible. Well, I feel like we're burying the lead here. Why didn't we start with this? This is a big deal.
No, because there'll be plenty of time to talk about it. It's called Vigilante, and it debuts at the Denver Film Festival.
Well,
so
when else are we going to talk about the debut?
It plays Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, and then I'll be back here early Monday morning.
So have you seen it yet?
Yes, I have.
And, I mean, obviously you're not going to trash it. You're an authentic guy. What's your feeling about
it? Many people had wanted to do documentaries over the years. I was never impressed with their presentation. And then a young man, David Wexler, came to me and he said, you know, we can't capture your voice with anybody else. You need to be the voice of the documentary.
Well, I mean, let's be honest.
Well, no.
You have to be the voice.
Well, that was a great concept he came up with. And then we shot it. Over a series of days.
Did he use archive footage?
I mean,
he had to have, yeah.
Yeah, archive footage from the 70s and
when
the
I 80s. Remember seeing you, like when I was living up in Tarrytown, New York, I remember seeing you and thinking, oh, he's cute.
That was it?
That was it.
Not like, wow, this is really brave what these guys and gals
are doing.
Well,
no, I mean, I was in seventh grade. Like, doesn't everybody do that?
You were infatuated with me at
Tarrytown.
No,
I wouldn't say that I was infatuated with you.
Well, guess what? I wasn't going to perv on you like Dustin Hoffman might have.
Well, I mean, I was 12 years old, so I would hope not.
But there's going to be a viewing at the Doc Film Festival. In fact, I'll send you the link because that's going to be in Manhattan in mid-November.
And it's the Doc Film Festival.
Right. There are two showings. One is on a Sunday night, and I think one is on a Wednesday afternoon.
Oh,
but
we
we'll
have to
post
go.
Them on the Curtis Facebook page here at WABC.
Will you be hosting?
Q&As.
This is cool.
Yeah, I do the Q&As. So you get to watch it. I get to watch it again.
And will we see it on Netflix? Stuff like that?
Yeah, potentially.
Oh, we've got it. This is amazing.
But it makes the rounds first of the film festival.
Right, yes.
Hopefully it wins awards, ribbons, an Oscar.
Can we interview this gentleman, Mr. Wexler?
Of course, of course. And then maybe I get to hang out with all the perverts in Hollywood.
Just... That's where we're going with this.
You know, and threaten to give them beatdowns if they don't keep their hands to their sides. So we'll see where it goes. But it's been 2 years in the work.
Mm-hmm.
And so now it's going to actually, a lot of documentaries, they don't see the light of day for many years.
They don't. Congratulations on this. I mean, this is a huge deal. And, you know, it's appropriate that this happens now before you run for mayor.
Well, I've spoken
to the
suits here at WABC, Chad Lopez, a.k.a. Chalo, who's
Chalo.
The capo de tutti of everybody here of our Cumulus family. Along with Craig
Schwab. The brains behind the Stage 17.
Right. Naturally, Craig Schwab, our program director, and Glenn Tassinelli, who's in charge of all sales for a lot of our sister stations, too. And I said, you know, what we ought to do for our listeners is because we have this great facility, Stage 17, in which we put so many acts on and interviews on. Mike Piazza was up there just the other night.
Yep.
Every week, you know, whether it's Nash, our sister station, they have someone up. Charlie Daniels was there being interviewed by Rita Cosby and performing the other day. 103.9, our urban station, they have guests.
It's a cool concept, but it's also just a cool place to go because, I mean, it's a really nice studio. I mean, great for people to show up. They've got the whole little, like, green room type of vibe going on.
And then WPLJ, which also has put on many shows there. So, I think I've convinced them that for our listeners, we should put it on the showcase for Vigilante, the Guardian Angel, Curtis Sliwa documentary, and maybe turn it into a contest, you know, where people can actually come up and see it here at Stage 17.
Will you have Wexler event?
Of course,
that would be, yes, because he needs to answer questions about why.
And Nancy Regula will be there, so people will get a chance to meet
you
my girlfriend.
You noticed that he had to throw out the Nancy Regula
because
he's so proud. I love it. It's so romantic.
Look, people always want to know. especially hipsters and millennials who didn't grow up in that era, like the invader from Alabama here, Justin B. Love,
who's sweetest thing in the
producer
planet.
And phone screener. He has no idea. Brian Mangalucci here, you know, with his man bun, his skinny jeans, and his
man
Converse
bun.
Sneakers. He's got no idea what it used to be like in New York City when it was sliding into the abyss in the 70s and 80s.
The 80s.
So it's a great period piece.
I can't wait to see the old footage. Just you doing your thing. I mean, you know, I've seen you in the last four or five years, whatever it was. But, yeah, just being able to go back and see you.
Yeah, I'm a lot calmer
as
now.
As a youngster.
Believe it or not, I'm a lot calmer now.
Well, I have to say, despite the way he sometimes may come off as Mr., you know, tough guy and, you know, he rips people apart and calls people names, he's actually, in real life, Curtis is actually kind of a softie. He's very polite. Shockingly, really easy to get along with. I mean, you don't get mad when your office is being moved, and you're like,
no,
oh,
no.
Sure, whatever, I'll do it.
Hey,
very, very cool.
I'm lucky to be alive. Things that tick me off are things like when I'm on a subway train and it's delayed or it's being rerouted, and then I start screaming holy bloody murder about the money-taking agency and how they're ripping us off.
Or Bo Dietl. Where did Bozo the money
Dietl.
Go, Bo?
Yeah, Bozo Dietl. As I mentioned today, I am launching an investigation as the New York State Reform Party chairman and filing a protest with the Campaign Financial Board because Bo Dietl, who always bogarts up here, you know, he's always on Imus in the morning, or he'll walk in on Bernard McGuirk and Sid Rosenberg like he owns the place. He's raised $1 million for this mayoral campaign.
$1 million. Big money. I mean, the commercials must be fantastic.
What commercials? Have you seen any TV commercials? Have you heard any radio commercials?
Come to think of it, no, I have not.
All right. Have you seen a lot of de Blasio and Maliatakis commercials?
No.
Well, there are many. I've seen them all. And not well done.
Facetious.
I'll say. But you got to pay a lot of coin for them in order to air on the networks.
Yeah.
As you know, you worked over at local Channel 5. That's where I met you. And we did Good Day Early Call New York, where I was a regular guest in the mornings. That costs a lot of money.
It costs a lot of money for commercials, so especially in this season.
Right. So if you raised $1 million, Bozo Dietl, where did it all go? And I ask this other question, as your campaign manager is John Hagerty, who went to jail because he ripped off the Michael Bloomberg campaign when he was running for re-election for $750,000. He went upstate to that same prison in Plattsburgh where the two local yokels broke out, remember?
Yeah, so a guy who went to prison while working on a campaign...
Is now the campaign manager of a campaign.
Okay, I just want to make sure that the two and two added up to seven.
I'm asking questions
makes
of
a lot of sense.
Where is the $1 million, Bo?
Where'd the dough go, Bo?
Are you laundering that money? Are you siphoning it through vendors and it's kicking back
maybe,
to you?
Maybe he has a good response. Maybe it's going to, to charities. I don't know. Maybe he didn't feel like he wanted to promote himself anymore on television. Everybody knows Bo.
The man said he was on record 2 weeks ago as saying, I'm making a major TV buy
for
$150,000. That was 2 weeks ago.
So that theory wouldn't work. So I don't know. Where would that money go?
Well, when you look at his campaign, his headquarters is in his business office, his private detection agency, so he's not paying for that.
You mean the one that he was spying on women who were for Fox News?
Yeah.
That one?
Maybe including yourself. Then also, he rides around in a van with his picture on it, but there's only one van. I've been in his company.
Well, vans can cost a lot, especially if you have them, you know, retrofitted in the last 2 weeks. Hasty service.
I've counted the number of campaign workers. These are paid workers. They're about six, half a dozen. They're good. They're dedicated.
Well, maybe they were putting in extra hours and he needed to pay them the overtime from that $1 million.
John Hagerty, who went to jail, how do you choose him to be your campaign manager?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of questions about some of our leaders these days and why they choose certain people to be in their inner sanctum.
Let's open up our phone lines on that. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let's go to Saul in Riverdale. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Saul.
Saul.
Hello, Juliet and Curtis. I think he's saving the money for the victory party, but I don't think he's going to win, but he's probably saving it. And these politicians... You know, they're all a bunch of, you know, widespread. Go Buchanan, go, go Buchanan, go, go Buchanan.
Mm. Go Buchanan, go, go Buchanan, go, go Buchanan. That's Steve from Manhattan.
Who's Buchanan?
Poor guy. He's called for years.
Who's Buchanan?
Pat Buchanan. The guy who was Trump before there was Trump.
Right. Okay. That's interesting.
In fact, he might want to get a new candidate. He's been doing that for years. Steve from Manhattan. He listens. He's an avid listener. We appreciate that.
Steve, can you switch it up and maybe go huddy?
Or just have a regular conversation.
I mean, he sounded like he was interesting, you know? I thought we were going in a good direction, Saul and I.
Nah. Mm-hmm. But he's an avid listener, and there are many avid listeners out there. And you realize, in talk radio, most people have never called up a talk radio station in their life.
Well, I'm trying to change that. I really am. I'm tweeting. I'm talking about how I want to be campaign manager for you in a writing campaign, perhaps in the next few days for mayor, or in 4 years.
Oh, no, not in this campaign, because I have my candidate, Sal Albanese. Remember, he's a reform party candidate.
Okay, that's fine. Okay, so we'll focus on the 4 years from now.
Maybe 4 years from now.
Okay.
Okay, Juliet?
You got it. But I mean, I'm serious about the campaign manager.
I think I could do it. Just slow yourself down. Let's get the documentary out there. Let's see how it's received.
Well, I'm thinking ahead. I like to plan ahead.
Do you think the panels who have to make decisions as to whether it may earn an Oscar nod or a Golden Globe nod, knowing the way I talk about them, will actually be open-minded?
I do. Because I think you're a fair person. I mean, I know you've said horrific things to me. You've told me literally to my face that you hate me, but yet I know the real you, and I know it's just a front. You're fronting, so I'm all right. I think they're going
to
be okay.
Well, let's quickly go to the phones. Up next
you're
in
charming.
The queue is Neil, who's calling from Brooklyn. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Neil,
I hate to say this, but comrade Bill de Blasio is going to win.
Ugh.
I don't know how.
I know
there's a lot of dumb people in this city, and a lot of them just want the free programs. Maybe he'll give them all like a free pass to the YMCA for a month or two.
Yeah, but Neil, as much as I criticize de Blasio, and you know I do because I hate him, the part-time mayor, the dope from Park Slope,
Big Bird.
People have accepted him for what he is, a crook. But neither Nicole Malliotakis or Bo Dito have made the case of this is who I am.
No, they haven't. They haven't.
And this is my vision.
So how about we just don't turn up at the polls?
No.
That's even worse.
That's what de Blasio wants.
Okay.
He wants to suppress the vote. I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, you vote for Sal Albanese, the true reformer. You may think you're wasting your vote, but it will definitely alert de Blasio that we're not just ignoring his corrupt
ways. He's a smart guy.
So remember, I'll be gone tomorrow, Rocky Mountain High to Denver.
So excited for you.
It'll be great.
It's going to be really cool.
Well, also, hooking up with my guardian angels in Denver, who have been really dedicated for many, many years. I don't know. A lot of people are not aware. We're in 13 countries now in 130 cities.
That's amazing, Curtis. I mean, it's all you. No wonder they have a documentary focusing on you. That's incredible.
Well, Juliet.
Proud of you, buddy.
Thank you very much for having joined us these past few days.
My pleasure.
I'm sure you'll be back with us same time, same place, probably sometime next week.
I hope so.
And by then, we will have known the results of what's going to take place on November 7th. But I do urge everybody out there, as much as it seems that Murphy is a slam dunk for governor in New Jersey and de Blasio for mayor in New York City, get out and vote.